be seated.
Our next case is 12-1994, David Frawley, DBA Frawley Trucking versus the estate of Timothy Oding, deceased. For the appellant, Mr. Nolan.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. A person buying insurance usually goes through an insurance agent. This is an agent for the insurance company. Through the agent, a person will purchase an insurance policy. That policy is a contract. Contract sets forth rights and obligations. And as part of a liability insurance contract, the company has the responsibility and contractual obligation to defend its policyholder in the event of a suit. And the contract also sets forth certain responsibilities that are in the sole, that are the sole responsibility of the insurance company, one of which is a duty to investigate accidents. That relationship is contractual between the policyholder and the insurance company. The problem with the Court of Appeals decision in this case is that it twists that agency, I'm sorry, it twists the contractual relationship between the policyholder and the insurance company and creates a legal fiction by which the policyholder is the principal and the insurance company becomes an agent of the policyholder. And that is the fundamental flaw in the Court of Appeals decision, which has far-reaching consequences for policyholders outside of the state of Ohio.
Well, counsel, I guess that's really the question we're here today. I'm glad you started with the word agent, which obviously is not agency. But if on my team, I have a State Farm or Nationwide or whatever, they're on my team and I have some difficulty and I send them over to take care of a difficulty our team has encountered, aren't they doing my bidding? Say if they go over to Indiana to straighten out a mess, aren't they doing my bidding as my team?
Yes, they are, but within the scope of the insurance policy. They have the sole control over how they want to investigate the accident. Under the policyholder, in your hypothetical, Your Honor, you have no control over how your insurance company is going to investigate an accident. This is about personal jurisdiction, and so I want to take a moment to talk about the facts that give rise to the case. This is an accident that occurred in Indiana, Spencer County, Indiana, a two-vehicle accident. A man named Craig Farler was driving a truck owned by Fraley Trucking, the appellee, on company business in Indiana. Timothy Oding, who unfortunately passed away in the accident, was driving a truck on behalf of J&R Equipment, which is insured by auto owners. So in this case, Fraley Trucking is the only Ohio resident. All defendants were residents of and served in Indiana, and Fraley Trucking was on business in Indiana at the time of the accident.
Well, you said all defendants were
served in Indiana.
Okay.
And the complaint specifies an address for all three defendants, including Auto Owners Insurance in Indiana.
Right, but Auto Owners clearly does business in Ohio.
Yes, Your Honor, yes. But as far as for purpose of this lawsuit and where they were served in Indiana, and their alleged conduct here as far as
Do we have any cases that, in terms of applying the long-arm statute, that turn on where one is served? I thought it all had to do with contacts.
It does, Your Honor, yes. But here, the alleged conduct on the part of auto owners is placing an investigative hold on the Fraley vehicle after the accident in Indiana. That's That's the sole contact that gives really rise to the jurisdictional issue in this case. Auto owners eventually settled all the claims with the exception of this one claim for loss of use for approximately 5 months. And because that alleged hold took place in Indiana.
Well, that's alleged hold. They did hold it, didn't they?
Well, Your Honor, we're here on proceed. I need to digress for a moment, okay? Because we're here procedurally on a basis of a Rule 12b motion to dismiss for personal jurisdiction. So, for purposes of this suit, all along we have been. We're bound by what's in the plaintiff's complaint, and that's what is alleged. Factually, that is a dispute, but we're not here to discuss that today. So what the Court of Appeals did is it took this notion of the hold that auto owners allegedly placed on the truck in Indiana and imputed that conduct to the policyholder, J&R Equipment. Now, as precedent, the court looked to cases decided by this court where in very narrow instances the court imputed conduct of the insurance company to its insured. But in none of those cases involved personal jurisdiction. In those cases, the policyholder was already subject to the jurisdiction of this court. Whereas here, we're dealing with a long-arm statute where we're reaching out over someone like J&R Equipment with no contacts with Ohio and bringing them into the court here.
Is there some law that we need to write on long-arm jurisdiction that's new or novel in Ohio in this case?
No.
Or are we applying the law? Are you asking us to apply the law we've always applied?
Yes.
And why isn't this just a case of error correction? Because in your view or in the view of your client, the Court of Appeals got it wrong.
Well, because it really involves drawing the line as far involves drawing a line as far as how far you're going to impute conduct from the insurance company to its
policyholder. We have an accident that it didn't occur in Ohio.
Did not occur in Ohio, no.
And all of the defendants don't reside in Ohio.
Correct.
And the vehicle that was involved was held at a location in
Indiana
for a period of 5 months.
Yes.
By the insurance carrier, and the insurance carrier was allegedly investigating the accident in connection with that storage.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And this is a lawsuit by the Fraley Trucking Company in Ohio.
In Ohio.
And your argument is that it should not be in Ohio, it should be in Indiana.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Because there's no minimum contacts in Ohio.
Yes, yes.
So what am I supposed to write to explain why the case belongs here or doesn't belong here? This is just an application of what we understand as long-arm jurisdiction. And what is the new or novel issue you want us to address?
The Court of Appeals went beyond the notion of imputing conduct of an insurance company to its insured.
So,
we're
going to write an opinion.
We're
writing an opinion with a proposition of law that says we may not impute the conduct of an insurance carrier to establish personal jurisdiction.
Yes, to its non-resident insured, yes, that's correct.
That's what
when that non-resident insured has no contacts with Ohio, that's correct.
That's what this
because
case
that
is.
Offends personal jurisdiction as well as notions of fair play.
This is a matter of public or great general interest in Ohio. This occurs often?
Yes, Your Honor, yes.
This does occur often?
This fact pattern, no, but it definitely has very significant implications if the Court of Appeals decision were allowed to stand.
The Court of Appeals actually said this is an issue of first impression, did it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
So I think that might be one of the concerns that they had, that this could be a potentially recurring problem.
Yes, Your Honor. And if I may, to speak a little bit further about this problem with applying the notion of an agency relationship in this context, taking out of the contractual relationship that the insurance company and the insured have. The court below looked to a case that's a South Alabama case. It's cited in the briefs and in the Court of Appeals decision, but I want to talk briefly about that case because that case was not a negligence case like this is, brought out of a motor vehicle accident. A motor vehicle accident had occurred, but the cause of action was not one of negligence. The cause of action was a statutory action by a hospital after it provided treatment to a person injured in the accident. So that's a key distinction. And also another distinction in that case is the policyholder did receive the benefit of a full release of all claims. In this case, by contrast, this is a complaint for negligence, not a statutory cause of action to assert a lien. Rather, this case it's similar to the Kirchen case. It's cited on page 7 of my merit brief, Kirchen versus Orth. And the key to that, to the rationale of that case, I think is very important and applicable here. There the court said, there can be no agency relation unless the purported principal has some control or right of control over the actions of his purported agent. What control or right of control does the insured have over his insurer in the conduct of settlement negotiations? And then the court goes and talks about the provisions in the policy that I referred to earlier, where the company, by contract, reserves the exclusive control to defend suits and to investigate claims. The court said the purpose of these provisions is to invest the insurer with the complete control and direction of the defense or compromise of claims against the insured. The insured has no control. And that's the problem with the Court of Appeals case. It applied an agency, this fictitious agency relationship, so as to trigger a provision in the long-arm statute where there is no agency relationship to get to the long-arm statute.
What they're really complaining about is the action of your client, the insurance company, not the driving in Indiana of the person who caused this wreck. They're saying, you guys tied up our truck and caused us economic loss.
Yes, sir.
And you're doing business here in Ohio. It's easy for you to defend this issue of why and how long you tied up this truck right here in Ohio where we are, as to have to go over and find some lawyer we don't know to represent us in Indiana.
Yes. However, on appeal, the Fraley Trucking has acknowledged that there is no cause of action against auto owners. So in a sense that point is moving.
The only
now,
way they can reach, I think it is agreed, the only way they can reach auto owners for tying up and their loss of the use of this truck for 5 months is to perceive it or portray it as the almost alter ego of the insured.
Right.
And even though the insured had no control over the delay in releasing this vehicle for 5 months and the subsequent loss of its use, that's the nexus, that's the connection that has to be shown here.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the question is it enough of a connection between the insured and the insurer to allow Fraley to make that?
That's right.
And apparently the Court of Appeals said yes. And they said that, you know, auto owners is operating here in Ohio. They're the ones that, you know, stepped up in the place of the insured in the aftermath of the accident. They're the ones that took this activity of the delay of the release of the vehicle, the negotiations and the mailing and the, you know, all the contacts were made in Ohio. And that's, the question is that sufficient to establish that kind of a relationship between the insured and the insurer?
Yes, Your Honor. And not only sufficient, but fair, because personal jurisdiction takes into account two things. The long-arm statute, which is the technical end of it, and then due process, fairness. No court, no Supreme Court of any state has reached this far and imposed an agency, fictitious agency relationship to assert personal jurisdiction over a non-resident defendant.
What's like the this. Downside if we uphold the Court of Appeals decision here? What's a bigger impact or on, because as Justice O'Donnell observed and Justice Lansinger, it's a case of first impression. Does this happen very often? Apparently not. So what's the ramification for the industry, for the insurance law in Ohio if this is the if this happens?
Very significant, Your Honor.
Very not, insignificant?
Very significant.
Okay.
Not only in Ohio, but if this elsewhere. And this is spoken to actually in our brief as well as the amicus brief. But imagine the same facts, except the accident took place, say, in Minnesota. You know, I mean, is it fair for the actions of an insurance company in Minnesota that happens to do business in Ohio result in the Minnesota policyholder being dragged into court into Ohio? Fundamentally, it's not fair, Your Honor.
And I say and that argument is Minnesota's further away, or what?
Yes. Your Honor, yes. And in this particular instance, too, we have a situation where, you know, Fraley Trucking is doing business in Indiana, you know, and so...
fundamental fairness would require the folks who own the truck to traipse to Minnesota to have an argument with the other driver with whom they really have no dispute, but to rather have an argument with your insurance company who's doing business right here.
Mm-hmm. But do we rewrite the laws of personal jurisdiction on the basis of this legal fiction of an agency relationship where there is none?
Your quarrel is with the analysis of the appellate court making the insurance carrier an agent of the policyholder. Is that what you started
Absolutely,
out with?
Your
That's
Honor.
What your view is.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Pagan?
Thank you. May it please the court, maybe I could address your issue first, Justice O'Donnell, and that's about error correction. There are three aspects of this case. The first aspect is the imputation and the specific issue about whether or not the actions of an insurer can impute to its insured for purposes of personal jurisdiction. Let's put that aside for 1 second. The other two aspects of this case relate to whether or not the long-arm statute was satisfied, and then second, minimum contacts. Now let's talk about error correction. The parties here agree with respect to long-arm jurisdiction, what the standard of review is. We agree that the law says that the evidence that I supplied to the trial court, all my evidence is construed in my favor and reasonable inferences are construed in my favor. We agree on the proper statute, which is 2307.382, Division A4 and A1, that those are what's being litigated in this case. The only thing about long-arm jurisdiction that's in dispute now is the application of that statute to these specific facts. That would seem like error correction to me. I don't agree that it's error. But there's nothing that this court should waste its prestige and its limited resources on with respect to the issue about the long-arm jurisdiction statute and its application here. And the same applies to minimum contacts. We all agree that that's the test that applies. We agree that this court has, in other cases, settled that it's a two-part test about deliberate and purposeful engagement, and then a second aspect in minimum contacts about fair play and substantial justice. Again, there's no dispute in the law here between the parties here. It's just an application of that law to the facts. And again, I would contend that that's not an issue that your court should spend substantial time on and waste an opinion on.
What about making the insurance carrier an agent of the policyholder?
And that's Justice Lansger's point, is that my 12th District Court of Appeals said, well, this is an issue of first impression, and the reason it's an issue of first impression is because I didn't have a case to support my claim, and they didn't have a case to support their claim about imputation in the context of an insurer's action in defending a claim, imputing to an insured for personal jurisdiction. There is no cases on that particular point. But then the issue becomes, well, is this a regular enough occurrence to justify your activity and an opinion and your limited resources? And my argument to that is the reason that there isn't a case to support my side or to support their side is because it doesn't happen very often.
So shouldn't we opine on it and make a decision one way or the other so that everyone knows that there is a case saying one side or the other is correct?
I'll leave that to your discretion about whether or not you use the resources of your court. I'm just pointing out that it's not a fact pattern that arises with much significance at all to produce any case law, not only in Ohio, but in the United States at all. And whether or not you choose to engage in that is up to you. But it is a truism that it's not happening very frequently.
Well, we know an accident occurred in the state of Indiana.
It did.
All of the defendants reside there.
Right.
The insurance carrier had the vehicle that belonged to your client towed to a storage yard and began to allegedly investigate what was done with the vehicle or whether the brakes worked or whatever the issues were with respect to whatever professional examination or inspection needed to be done to that vehicle.
Right.
And your client resides in Ohio.
Right.
And is seeking recovery for the extended storage of that vehicle and the deprivation of use during the period of time
right,
it's being examined.
Right.
Why would a case like that be filed in Ohio and not in Indiana, where the accident occurred, where the defendants reside, and where the subject or the conduct occurred?
There's a practical reason and then there's a legal reason. The practical reason Justice Pfeiffer brought up, and that is I've represented Fraley Trucking and the Fraley Brothers for many, many years. Frankly, I sent them to an Indiana attorney at the beginning of this case. They had a bad relationship with that attorney, and they wanted me because they trusted me.
There's a good reason.
Well, that's the one reason. But the second reason is that this court has defined in the Queen City case that Ohioans have a right to recover for intangible economic loss that arises from tangible harm to property. And so I have a clear claim under Ohio law. And based on and I'm not an Indiana attorney, but my research in Indiana is that the Indiana Supreme Court has not adopted that restatement provision that you specifically adopted in Queen City. So there would be the question about whether or not my client could recover in Indiana. And maybe he could, maybe he couldn't, but I know he could in Queen City under the Queen City case. And the point of it all is that I have an Ohio business who suffered an Ohio injury because they let contracts in Ohio. And the loss of those contracts is covered under Ohio tort law. So that's why it was filed in Ohio.
All right, thank you.
And then let me just speak briefly on Justice Lansger's point about the imputation, because I think I have the better of the argument. And I have the better of the argument for five reasons. And I think the first thing you need to do in assessing this case is to go to the statute itself. The personal jurisdiction statute allows for and specifically states that agency relationships do apply. It says that that a person for personal jurisdiction purposes includes a representative or somebody who acts through an agent. And that's language that agency principles do apply. And there's no exception in that statute for insurers or for anybody.
But in this case, wouldn't it be the insurance company? You're arguing the insurance company is the agent of the insured.
Right, right. And the reason and the rationale, you've adopted this rationale in other cases that relate to liability, not personal jurisdiction, and I'll get to that point in a second. And that's because the insured contracts with the insurance company, brings them into the case, and then has them act in its name and for its behalf. So it is acting as an agent or a representative of the insured for purposes of the litigation, and that's what they did here.
So the agency is, and you want to impute the loss that was created by the five-month delay to the insured?
For purposes of personal jurisdiction, yes. And
although the insured had no participation in that.
No, you're right about that. But this court in PICO and in Griffey decided that in the relationship between an insurer and insured and a third party, that agency and representative principles do apply. And for the very reasons I just said, the rationale, and that the insured contracts with the insured, brings them into the case, and has the insurer act on its behalf and in its name. And for example, in a good example would be in claims for bad faith negotiation for pre or post judgment interest. Those actions of the insurer are imputed to the insured under PICO. So why wouldn't it be the case for personal jurisdiction? In fact,
counsel, don't you run a risk though? Because I'm hearing what you're saying. But as near as I can tell, nothing happened in Ohio in answer to Justice O'Donnell's questions. But if we follow the agency relationship that you're advocating today, are you suggesting that if an insurance company in Connecticut sends a check to someone in Cincinnati, somehow their insured has now invoked the long-arm jurisdiction of Ohio?
No. It would require a tortious act that would be imputed from the insured. From the insurer to the insured. Here, the tortious act was seizing my client's property, and that caused injury. Making phone calls, sending emails, sending a check isn't tortious behavior that would impute. And the long-arm statute confines imputation to behavior that arises from the cause of action.
The tortious act occurred in Indiana. Or Do you want to say a phone call or a directive from an Ohio office allows for that tortious act to be created in Ohio?
No, the tortious act occurred both in Indiana and Ohio, in that the tortious act committed by the insurer here was the seizing of the truck. And while the seizure occurred in Indiana, the economic harm from that, the failure to let contracts, occurred at my client's operation headquarters in Madison Township, Ohio. That's where so there was elements of the tort that occurred in both states. Let me get back to what I was talking about with respect to imputation, because I do think I have the better argument. And the argument is statutory, in that agency and imputation and all of that is in the statute itself. And I cite in my brief, and I think it's very clear, and I think my opponent would concede, that imputation regularly occurs outside of the insured context for personal jurisdiction purposes. What's irregular about this case is that it's just the insurer and the insured relationship. As we've just talked about, this court in three other instances have imputed the acts of an insurer to its insured for purposes of liability. And it occurs to me that liability is the greater power than personal jurisdiction. Liability is putting a money judgment on somebody, whereas jurisdiction is just the power of a court to hear the case. So if this court in PICO and Griffey and other cases has said the acts of an insurer can impute to you for liability, why wouldn't it extend to the lesser power of personal jurisdiction, which is just to confer a power on a court to hear the case? And also, I think that if you want to relate to and go back to statutory canons and look at the personal jurisdiction statute, the word agency is in the disjunctive with the word representative. To me, that indicates that the General Assembly intended for a broad application of the terms agency and representative, that they wouldn't have used both unless they were trying to cover a large amount of conduct. And you know what? If they wanted to exempt or provide for an exception for insurance companies, they could have done it, but they didn't. Instead, they used broad terms, agency and representative. That goes in favor of my argument here and not to my clients. And then lastly, if you read the cases about imputation, because again, for personal jurisdiction purposes, imputation happens regularly. There's all kinds of companies that are out of this country that get the acts of their agents imputed to them. For purposes of personal jurisdiction, and when you read the cases, the rationale provided is that it would be unfair to allow a principal to send its agents out into the field and to commit torts and wrongdoing and not to be held responsible for it.
That's the issue here. I mean, the idea of principals sending their agents, and what you're saying here, the principal is the insured,
right,
and the agent is the insurance company.
Right.
That seems that's what I'm having concern about, the new template, if you will, for minimum contacts in personal jurisdiction. I mean, you talk about the limited nature, but you're really talking about an individual having to appear in a court because the court has jurisdiction personally over that entity.
Right.
In this case, the insured did nothing, and the actions that you're complaining about are of the insurance company.
Right. Well, here's my response to that. My response is I disagree with they did nothing. They did enough to confer personal jurisdiction and minimum contacts, and that is because they contracted with the insurance company.
So by contracting with an insurance company, we are submitting to the personal jurisdiction of any court that company deals with or has contacts with?
Well, they did more than contract. They also then brought it into the case and then allowed that insurance company to act on its behalf and in its name. And while acting on its behalf and in its name, it took my client's property and caused additional harm. And so they don't come with clean hands. And the harm occurred in Ohio,
And the insured had nothing to do with the actions of the insurance company.
Right, but in the same way,
right to control the actions of the insurance company, which normally a principal would be able to do.
Right, but in the same case, if I had some tort claim brought against me and my insurance company, who I contracted with, screwed up and negotiated in bad faith under PICO, I would be responsible for the pre or post judgment interest, even though I didn't control the litigation. And that's what this court's established jurisprudence is. Because the realities of insurance litigation are that they're acting in your name. And that if the insurance company causes harm to a third party, there has to be some way of some remedy or relief. And because we have a direct action statute, you can't get that relief from the insurance company. You can't.
Well, and that's where I have problem. Why should that statute apply to this fact situation? The tortfeasor, your opposing counsel says you both agree it applies, and so you can't come. But you did sue them directly, and I'm having difficulty with why that statute should apply here, because the harm that you're complaining of is all caused by the insurance company. This is not a case of where you're trying to show a jury, hey, there's insurance in the background or something like that. You have a direct dispute with something they're doing.
I agree with you, and I did try to make an argument in the trial court that the direct action statute did not apply, and that argument was rejected, and I really struggled with that issue. But the way the statute is written, I didn't see any relief.
And you didn't appeal that point, so we can't address
it. I'm sorry.
Is that beyond our reach?
It is beyond your reach, because I found the PICO case, and I thought that was the answer to all my prayers, and so... which stands for the proposition that there's imputation and all that, and I went that route and abandoned this exception to the direct action statute. Although I will say, at my oral argument in the 12th District, they had the same position that you did. They did not like the direct action statute to apply in this case. But there are no cases under the direct action statute that would have supported my position on it. So that's why that's the posture. I see that I'm out of time. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used all your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Counsel,
I'm sorry.
I want to go with my last question. Is that conclusively beyond our reach? Because that seems to me to be the cleaner and less problematic answer for both sides, is just to say, under this fact pattern, should be able to come directly against your insurance company, because your insurance company is the problem.
Well, again, it's not before the court today, because that issue pertains to the direct action statute, is not before the court. And another complicating factor there, Your Honor, is This is a loss of use claim, which is derivative of the property damage claim that's already been settled. So that's another wrinkle. It's the actions here are not, you know, with respect to the loss of use claim, it's not entirely independent of the claim that's already been settled for the damage to the truck.
You settled how much it's going to cost to repair the truck.
Right, that's right.
But what's in dispute is how much revenue did they, net income did they lose?
Correct, Your Honor.
Because you guys hung on to it on an unreasonable period
right.
of time.
But that's derivative of the property damage claim. So it's...
It just seems to me...
it's not
we set up We set up walls for reasons, but sometimes the wall shouldn't be there, and it seems to me this is a case where it shouldn't be. And if we were dealing with it directly, then this case wouldn't... You wouldn't have your argument that all this, the sky is going to fall on insurance companies if you folks find minimum contacts in this situation.
2 points I want to speak to real briefly, Your Honor. One point that counsel raised is why he did not file in Indiana. He gave you an answer, and that's another reason why we don't want to extend personal jurisdiction farther than it already is extended. It leads to forum shopping. The Court of Appeals decision would lead to forum shopping.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Thank you, gentlemen.